Well, good evening and welcome to the fourth presentation in this our 10th series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, I coordinate the series with my colleague in the back, Peggy Wright, with help from our webmaster around taking pictures, Haiwan Wan, and our instruction coordinator at the back, Brian Carson. Daniel Peach and Shadon Pruitt designed our posters, and our technical specialist tonight is Terry Perkins. Our speaker tonight, while a native of Norton, Virginia, grew up in Sandusky, Ohio, where he attended schools and dreamed about being a radio and television broadcaster. He was influenced by Muhammad Ali and Hank Aaron, two great athletes he was privileged to meet and interview when he was only 17. He attended Bowling Green State University in Ohio, from where he received his BA in communication. And in 1980, he became a news reporter for WHAS Channel 11 television in Louisville. In 1987, he joined Wave TV, Channel 3, as executive sports producer, from where he won an Emmy. In 1994, he became the vice president for public affairs and corporate communications for the Kentucky Lottery Corporation. And while there, he had the privilege of handing out checks to winners worth millions of dollars and also communicated messages about the lottery's mission to generate revenue for the Kentucky Educational Excellence Scholarships, which many WKU students receive. In July of 2003, he joined Hillerick and Bradsby as the Vice President for Corporate Communications, where his responsibilities focus on enhancing and protecting the image of a name synonymous with baseball, the Louisville Slugger. When not working, he enjoys fitness activities like running and cycling, as well as watching college football and basketball, and of course, Major League Baseball. It's a real pleasure to welcome Rick Redmond. Rick?
Well, thank you very much, Brian. It's an honor to be here at Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green tonight. A lot of connections. My son Tanner is here. He's a Western student. His brother Zach went to Western and graduated a couple of years ago, and I can gladly say that thanks to his WKU education, he is now gainfully employed and working in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So one highlight, thanks for that great introduction, Brian, I really appreciate it, that there's one highlight I think that we might have missed in there that I should have had you add, and that is that I had the opportunity to also help shape and mold one of your esteemed faculty members here at WKU, Angie Jerome, who I see sitting back there, Dr. Jerome, who did an internship with me many years ago, and she's done quite well, but I don't think that that had anything really to do with me, but it's great to see you, Angie, and I understand that some of her students are here tonight and can get extra credit for being here, so that's always good. Glad to hear that, but Louisville Slugger is really the great American success story. It is a company that was formed by German immigrants. I'm going to tell you the whole story tonight about how our company was formed, how it has grown and maintained this incredible name of Louisville Slugger and the strongest brand in baseball throughout the decades. It's not an easy thing to do. We're a fifth-generation family-owned company. And that's really quite remarkable because all the research shows that less than 5% of family-owned companies ever make it past the third generation. Less than 1% ever make it past the fourth generation. And we are in our fifth generation of family ownership. So it's really remarkable, not only for any company to make it that far, but certainly a company with the stature and the brand name of Louisville Slugger. And it has its challenges to continue to be able to maintain our stature and our presence in the world of sports and baseball. I'm going to talk about that. But first, before we get there, I want to give you a sense of really what Louisville Slugger is all about and who we are.
Before the World Series, before Little League, before hot dogs in Yankee Stadium, even before three strikes meant you were out. I was there, establishing the traditions of what would become America's pastime. You see, I've been a part of the game for as long as there's been a game, from its infancy in the 1800s. Through the glory days and growing pains of the 20th century. And into a new millennium filled with promise. Through these ages, I've had the honor of going to the plate with the greatest players the world has known. And I've been equally honored to go to the plate with some of the greatest players the world never knew. I've helped many a young boy reach his dreams, and many a college team to earn coveted bragging rights. I have seen more games, set more records, and won more championships than anyone. And I'm just getting warmed up. Today, I bring a new level of performance technology to yet another new generation of ball player. As the game has changed, so have I. But I never forget where I came from or why I'm here. Every time you take me into your hands, I will make you a part of baseball's oldest and greatest winning legacy. I will connect you to the game's most legendary players and defining moments. The Babe calling the shot. Tony Gwynn taking his eighth batting title. Hammer and Hank breaking the unbreakable record. Jolton Joe setting a record that may never be broken. I will link you to the Hall of Fame. Omaha. The World Series. And the World Stage. I will make your heart beat in rhythm with the very heartbeat of the game itself.
Turn your call 208, please. Thank you.
I will give you the confidence of knowing that you're swinging the best there is. And when the moment of truth arrives, I will give you the performance that has turned players into legends since 1884. I am Louisville Slugger. An American original. An American innovation. An American icon.
Not just an American icon, but certainly a Kentucky icon, and we're proud and honored to be able to represent our home state, the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and our hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. It is a great story of how it all got started. I mentioned that it's the great American business success story. It was started by an immigrant family, the Hilrich family. Moved to Louisville, Kentucky in the mid-1800s. They were German immigrants, and back in Germany, they were woodworkers, and they made all the things of the time, like wooden porch railings and butter churns and bedposts and all those kinds of things. And they immigrated to this country in the mid-1850s. They came down the Ohio River, and when they got to Louisville, they stopped and set up a new woodworking shop because the falls of the Ohio were there and they really couldn't go much further. So they decided to set up this little woodworking shop on the banks of the Ohio River. And within a few years, they were doing quite well. But J. Frederick Hilrich, who was the patriarch of the family and who moved his family to this country, had a son named Bud Andrew Hilrich. And young Bud Hilrich was doing an apprenticeship in his father's woodworking shop when he was age 14. And he was known to sneak off to the baseball games. who loved baseball and loved to play baseball, and Louisville had a professional team at that time, and they played just a few blocks away from the woodworking shop. So he was known to sneak off to the ball games. And by the age of 17, he had a fateful visit to the ballpark one day in April of 1884, and he connected with Pete, the old Gladiator Browning. This is Pete Browning here. Pete Browning was the star player of the Louisville Eclipse professional baseball team. And Pete Browning was one of the greatest hitters in the history of baseball. If you go to Cooperstown, you will see Pete Browning's name on a list of one of the highest batting averages in baseball history, a .341 career hitter. Although he is not a member of the Hall of Fame. Part of that is because he was apparently a very terrible defensive player. He was also quite a drinker and didn't make a lot of friends in the baseball world because of that. So they say since he was a terrible defensive player and couldn't catch a cold, and because he was a drinker, he never made it into the Hall of Fame as a member. But on this fateful afternoon in April of 1884, he met young Bud Hillery. And here's how it happened. It was a different era. A young kid like Bud Hillrich, who was 17 years old at the time, could approach a ball player after the game, and that's exactly what he did. And the reason he went up to Pete Browning after this particular game that day was because Browning had struggled. He had gone 0-for-3, and he broke his bat. So he went hitless that day. This great hitter, .341 career hitter, went hitless that day, and he broke his bat. So young Bud Hillrich goes up to him, and he says, "Mr. Browning, my father owns a woodworking shop just a few blocks from here. If you care to join me there, I'll be happy to try to make you a new bat." Well, the legend has it that that's exactly what they did. They went to the woodworking shop, and they worked into the night, taking a piece of wood, a piece of northern white ash, and putting on the lathe, starting to turn it, and pulling it off the lathe, and Pete Browning gripping it, pumping it, swinging it, not quite right yet, put it back on, so off and on to the lathe until that bat was just the way Pete Browning wanted it. Well, he took that bat to the ballpark the next day, he got 3 hits, the Eclipse won the game, and thus the Louisville Slugger is born. Soon, other players on his team were clamoring for these Hillrich-made bats. They had a great reputation for that team, and so as other teams came to Louisville to play against them, they heard about these Hillrich-made bats that were of high quality and were custom-made exactly the way you wanted them, and they started asking for them. So the next thing we knew, we were in the bat business. We weren't just in the butter churn business or the bedpost business or the wagon wheel business, but we were making baseball bats, and it's been quite a ride since then. Here we are, 128 years later, and we are the number one bat in Major League Baseball. We are the number one bat maker in the world, and we are synonymous with the game of baseball. But of course, all this didn't happen overnight. You know, you hear people talk about overnight success stories. Well, there's very rare in life when there's anything like an overnight success story. This has taken a long time for us to get to where we are, and even just getting over the hump to keep in the baseball business in those early years, because there was some family opposition. Young Bud Hillrich's father, Jay Frederick, who had moved his family to this country from Germany, was totally opposed to baseball. Back in those days, baseball was known as a game for drunkards, womanizers, and gamblers. And when you think about it, in some ways, not a lot's changed. I say that in jest. It's a great game, and of course, most players are minding their P's and Q's, but certainly we have fun with that. But the father was opposed to the family business getting into making baseball bats because he completely opposed the lifestyle and the culture of baseball at that time. But young Bud persisted and pushed and pushed and pushed for the company to stay in the baseball bat business. And so he worked very closely with the players on the Louisville team, and as they came through, making custom bats for every player that wanted one. And the affinity that these players had for our company continued to grow so much that we were able to take a huge step in the marketing world, which back in those days, few people were really doing much marketing in the sporting goods business. and we signed players to contracts to endorse our products. As a matter of fact, Louisville Slugger started it all. We were the first company to sign a professional athlete to an endorsement contract to endorse a product. And all the years that we've said that, we've always waited for somebody to come out of the woodwork and go, wait a minute, no you didn't, we've got proof right here, we did. But no one has ever been able to come up with that. And we signed a player named Hannes Wagner in 1905. Hannes Wagner is one of the greatest players in the history of baseball. He was a member of the first class of the Hall of Fame, the very first class inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. He played for the Louisville team, the Eclipse. He was later moved to the team in Pittsburgh because of a merger of those teams, and because of some pressure that caused Louisville to lose its team, and it got pushed out of the league. But from there, we signed other great players like the Georgia Peach, Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth is the guy who really helped propel our company to great, great heights. Of course, we all know that Babe Ruth was the Michael Jordan of his era. I guess he was the LeBron James of his era, maybe even larger than those guys are today, because there was so less competition for the entertainment value and less competition in this world of sports. So if you were a professional athlete, certainly the stature of Babe Ruth, you were larger than life, literally larger than life. And if you come to our museum in Louisville and you tour, and you'll see Babe Ruth's bat on display there, and we have a wonderful little exhibit that has some film of Babe Ruth in it back in his heyday. And there's these great old black and white shots of him standing on the ledge of a building, the second floor of a building in Manhattan, with a huge crowd, thousands of people below him, and he's signing, autographing baseballs and throwing them down to these people. So that gives you an idea of what a huge, huge figure Babe Ruth became. And so because of his stature in the game and the home runs that he hit, that helped propel our company to even greater heights. And we used Babe Ruth in a lot of advertising. And he would write endorsement letters for us that we'd get published. So that was just a huge, huge thing for our company. Lou Gehrig, the Iron Horse, you know, had the record for the most consecutive games played until Cal Ripken Jr. broke it, a decade or so ago. Ted Williams, arguably the greatest hitter in the history of baseball, the last hitter to hit over 400 in a season in 1941. The guy right below him, Joe DiMaggio, 1941 season was pretty special for him as well. That was when he had a 56-game hitting streak with his Louisville Slugger bat. And again, if you come to our museum in Louisville, you will see a Joe DiMaggio bat from the 56-game hit streak. He only used three bats in that hit streak, and we have the bat number three, the one that would have set the record on display in our museum. Interesting sidebar story on that. We all know that the hit streak was 56 games, but DiMaggio visited Louisville Slugger a number of years ago, probably 20 years ago or so, and he was talking to Rex Bradley, who was the gentleman who ran our professional baseball division at the time and worked closely with the players. And Joe had actually purchased about 1,000 bats that he was autographing and he was going to sell. It was a way he was making some revenue in his retirement. And Rex Bradley was just making conversation with him while Joe's sitting there signing all these bats. And Rex says, wow, Joe, that 56-game hit streak you had, I guess that's the record. It'll never be broken. Joe stops and looks at him and says, I just want you to know it was really 57 games. And Rex stops and says, what are you talking about? Everybody knows it was 56. And DiMaggio said, the All-Star game was in there and I got a hit. So in his mind, it was a 57-game hit streak. And of course, after his streak was broken, we all know he went on a 19-game hitting streak right after that. So one of the greatest of all time, DiMaggio. Jackie Robinson, we all know what he has meant to not only baseball, but to our culture, to this country and its history and advancement of just the racial causes. And one of the great things that we take pride in our company is when we sign Jackie Robinson. Does anybody remember the year Jackie Robinson broke into Major League Baseball? I bet you do. 1947, April 1947. We signed Jackie Robinson to an endorsement contract in October of 1946, 6 months prior to him breaking into Major League Baseball and breaking the color barrier. So it's something that we take great pride in our company, that we, our people at that time had a vision and saw what was coming and knew that this was important, not only for baseball, but for our country. And so we take great, great pride in that. Hammer and Hank Aaron, the home run king, broke Babe Ruth's record, and of course hit every single one of his home runs with a Louisville Slugger bat. As a matter of fact, over 8,500 Major League Baseball players have been under contract with Louisville Slugger. Now, what's it mean to be under contract with Louisville Slugger? When you sign a contract with us, that means that we will give you the absolute best service. You're going to get the best wood, and you're going to get your bats before other players who are not under contract. And the bonus is, you not only get your name on your bat, but you get your name in your signature. And time after time, again and again, we hear from these players, even today, that when they get that first bat that's a Louisville Slugger and they see their own signature on that bat, they realize they have arrived and made it as a Major League Baseball player. And even with the millions of dollars that these players make, we have to remember that they're playing a kid's game. They're still really kids at heart. And it means something to them to be able to have their signature on their own bats. In terms of the wood, getting the best wood, that's our commitment to the players who are loyal to us. If they're loyal enough to have a contract with us and help us promote our products, then we're going to be loyal to them and ensure that they get the best selection of wood. So, you know, trees are living product. No two trees are exactly alike. That means the wood that we extract from the trees to make baseball bats are never going to be exactly alike. They're never going to be two pieces of wood that are identical. So we have to be very careful and selective in how we choose the wood to make Major League Baseball bats. And we do the best that we can to ensure that our players get that very best wood. And in terms of them getting their bats first, an example of that would be Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez, those guys on the New York Yankees who are contract players for us. If we're making bats in our factory on a particular day and we have to be making bats for some guys on the Colorado Rockies or the Houston Astros who aren't contract players, and we get an email or a phone call from the equipment manager with the New York Yankees, Rob Cucuzza, and Rob says, I need a dozen P72s for Derek and I need a dozen C271s for A-Rod by tomorrow. Guess what happens? Those bats for those guys on the Astros and the Rockies, who are non-contract players, are going to be put on hold for a little bit until we can take care of those contract players who are loyal to us. Now, we'll certainly still get those bats made and shipped on time for those Astros and Rockies players, but we're going to make sure that we take care of those contract players first and foremost because they're loyal to us. We're going to be loyal to them. So those kinds of things really lead to three simple rules that we have found that have helped make our business successful over 128 years. Three simple rules of business. Make a quality product, so we're talking about the quality wood and doing the absolute best that we can, providing outstanding, excellent customer service. And that means listening to your customers, not only servicing them and giving them what you think they need, but listening to them and giving them what they want. And that's really how our company started. Think back to that original story of the very first bat for Pete Browning. Young Bud Hillrich was smart enough and wise enough to listen to that customer as they took the piece of wood on and off the lathe to make the bat exactly the way he wanted it. And that's what we continue to do today in working with all of these players. We send our pro bat reps to spring training, and they work with the players in the clubhouses, around the batting cages, you know, on the field, throughout the season, from the start of spring training right up until the playoffs start. And actually, our guys even go to the World Series and say, hey, you know, is there anything else you still need? Because we can get it done. Now, back in the old days, you know, it would take weeks to get bats to these players sometimes. But today, we can, you know, because of, you know, thank goodness for UPS having its international air hub in Louisville and FedEx and some of the competitors, we can get bats to players the very next day. And in some cases, we've been known to get bats to players on the same day. We can drive bats up to teams in Cincinnati. We've done it by driving bats to players in St. Louis, in Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, whatever it takes to make sure that we service our customers. And because of that great customer service, then we build relationships. And by building those relationships with guys, they know that we're going to take care of them. And that's how we get them to remain loyal to us. Because believe me, there are a lot of competitors out there today. We have many, many competitors. We used to be pretty much, you know, the only vac company on the block. And you know, there was a time back in the you know 30s, 40s, and 50s, it was us and a company called Adirondack. And then Rawlings, which is a great competitor of ours, and they do a great job. They acquired Adirondack, and it was us and Rawlings. But now, today, there are 30 bat companies approved to make bats for Major League Baseball. You probably never heard of most of them. Some of them are really small little companies that are almost mom and pops out of their garages. But some of them are making a quality product. And what that has done is that's forced us to continue to improve and not rest on our laurels and continue to do everything that we can to get better. And that's why those relationships that we build with the players are really, really important. So you can never, ever underestimate the power of those relationships. That's what helped build our brand. You know, this is a photo going back into the 50s, Phil Rizzuto and Yogi Berra and Casey Stengel visiting the Louisville Slugger factory. Many players come and visit us over the years. Ted Williams used to visit the Louisville Slugger factory frequently. Again, greatest hitter of all time, arguably. Boston Red Sox, back in those days, Louisville, Kentucky was the AAA affiliate of the Boston Red Sox, the old Louisville Colonels. And so when the Red Sox would come north from spring training, taking the train to go either to Boston or Cleveland or Chicago or Detroit or wherever it was that they were going to open their season, they usually would stop in Louisville on the way and play an exhibition game in Louisville against the AAA Colonels. Well, while they were in town, Ted Williams was known to want to come visit the Louisville Slugger factory and pick out wood for his bats. And we always made sure that we took really good care of Ted Williams, not only because was he a great hitter, but he was great for our company, a great face for our company, did a lot of advertising and promotion for us. And he liked to bat with really tight grain, very narrow grain. And what that means is that that tree grew really slowly in the forest. The more narrow the grain, the slower the tree grew, and that means the harder the wood. And so Ted would come into the factory, and he was known to tip several of the guys in the factory as much as $20. Now, back in the 40s, you know, 30s and 40s, early 50s, $20 was a pretty significant amount of money for those guys to get who were working in a factory in Louisville. And so they took good care of Ted. You can count on it, making sure that Ted's wood was selected throughout the season and setting aside really great pieces of wood for Ted Williams. I asked Bobby Doerr a question about that. Bobby Doerr was one of Ted Williams' teammates with the Boston Red Sox, and I had the privilege to meet Bobby Doerr at a Cooperstown Hall of Fame induction 8 or 9 years ago. And I was telling him the story, and I said, you know, I just wondered, is that true? Because we've heard that, we've seen pictures of Ted in the factory, but I really wonder if it was true that he tipped the guys in the factory like that. And Bobby Doerr said, not only was it true, but I did it too. And he said that when they would come to town, that he and Ted would sit on the curb in front of the Louisville Slugger factory at 7 o'clock in the morning, waiting for them to open the factory doors so that they could get in and start selecting wood for the season. Because to them, it was like two kids trying to get into a candy factory. That was the way they made their living. They wanted to find this great wood, and they were willing to take care of those guys and make sure that they did it. Of course, talked about Babe Ruth, one of the greatest of all time. And how the word of mouth of a guy like Babe Ruth promoting our product, not only in advertising, but talking our product up on the field and in the clubhouse and in the dugout, and other people seeing a guy like Babe Ruth swinging a Louisville Slugger bat, wow, it must be good. That's the bat I want too. So that's another great way that we make sure that those relationships would pay off for us. Another thing that's always been important for our company is that our top management has always been involved and at the forefront of ensuring that we have high quality in our products, ensuring that we have great service to our customers and in building those relationships. Anybody have any idea who this gentleman is in this picture? Venture a guess. That's Bud Hillrich. That's the guy who made the first Louisville Slugger bat when he was 17 years old. In this picture, he's in his late 70s. And Bud continued to work in the baseball business and in our factory and going out and meeting and players and talking to players on the field up until he was 80 years old. He actually died when he was 80 years old, and he was on his way to baseball's winter meetings when he died at age 80. So it's always been important for the Hillrich family and the leaders of the family to stay involved with the business, and that's something that, that they've always done. So we grew to number one in baseball. It's a position that we still enjoy today, 128 years later. In our heyday, we were making as many as 8 million bats per year, 8 million wood bats per year. Today, we make about 1.5 million or 1.6 million wood bats per year, and that includes the little miniature ones that we're going to give everybody tonight before you leave. But we still make about close to 1 million full-size wood bats that are used for Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball. Very few youth leagues with wood bats now, although some of the travel ball teams play in these wood tournaments on weekends. And there's a lot of adult leagues. I don't know how many of my friends back in Louisville are constantly bugging me because they're playing in some old man's wood league. Hey, I need some bats. Can you get me some bats? Constantly getting bugged about that. So we've stayed number one because of those relationships, and part of that is because of relationships with guys like Derek Jeter. You know, we've talked about Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, Thomas Wagner, Ty Cobb, guys like that who were the face of our company for many, many years. Today, the face of our company in Major League Baseball is really a guy named Derek Jeter. Whether you're a Yankee fan or not, I gotta tell you, Derek Jeter is one class guy. He is the real deal. What you see with Derek Jeter is what you get. He's honest, he's integrous. He's just a good human being, and I'll tell you a little story about that here in a couple of minutes. But before that, I thought we would take a look at something with Derek.
Yeah, for me it was, I signed out of high school, and when I first signed, I was looking for a wooden bat, and this was, Louisville Slugger obviously goes without saying how reputable they are, how long they've been around, how much success people have had with it. In terms of the model, I just picked a bat that was shaped like my aluminum bat, and it was a P72, and my entire career I've never swung another bat. Well, two things. One, it's relevant because it's a good product. You know, you wouldn't be around for 128 years if it wasn't a good product. And two, people believe in it. I think that's the biggest thing. And you take a lot of pride in your work and the equipment that you use. And the best. They're the best in the business. And that's the reason why I've used it. That's the reason why so many other players have used it throughout the years. I have confidence. You know, you have a lot of players that come out using different companies, and I'm not talking bad about any other companies, but they get the bats, they complain, they check the size, they check the weight. I don't have to do that. I open the box and I use it, and that's the way I've always been. That's one thing I've never had to worry about. Well, the thing with Louisville is it's like a family. You see the same guys year in and year out, which makes it comfortable for us as players. We know who to look for, we know who to talk to, and we know when we talk to them that it gets done. And, I enjoy that. It's a close-knit group of employees that work in Louisville, but you see the same faces, and it's so comfortable for us as players. I'm Derek Jeter. I'm a Louisville Slugger guy. Louisville Slugger makes history every season. Louisville Slugger, number one bat in Major League Baseball.
So, one of the cool things in my job is I get to do stuff like that. Get to go to spring training and shoot videos with Derek Jeter and Josh Hamilton and Curtis Granderson and Ian Kinsler and David Wright and Joey Votto and Jay Bruce. Guys like that, it's cool. It's a lot of fun. But to give you a little bit of background on that particular video would tell you what a neat guy he is. The day we shot that in Tampa at their spring training facility back last spring, we set the camera up and everything was ready to go on the first base side. And we were just waiting for Derek to come out of the clubhouse so we could shoot the video. And it was going to be a real quick shoot. We're going to do this thing in 10, 15 minutes max. And it took Derek a little bit longer to get out there that day than we had hoped. And because we really wanted to shoot the video before anybody got into the stadium, because our fear was that once people started coming to the stadium and Derek Jeter's out there, there are going to be people screaming and yelling at him, and we're going to have all this background sound, you know, in our video that we would have to try to figure out a way to eliminate. And unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Derek was a little slow in getting out there that particular afternoon, and they had started to let some people into the stadium. And there were two ladies in there, probably late 30s, early 40s, who sat down right behind the dugout. And they were sitting there before Derek came out. And of course, once Derek came out, they were going crazy. I mean, everybody loved Derek Jeter, especially the ladies loved Derek Jeter. And he's a great guy. He's a great looking guy. He's an athlete. He makes millions of dollars. You know, he's in GQ. He dresses great. He's, you know, why wouldn't you like Derek Jeter, right? And you notice the shirt that he had on was embroidered Jeter, especially made for him by Nike. And so these ladies, one of them started kidding around with Derek when he first came out. We were putting the microphone on him, getting ready to do the interview. She's like, Derek, I love that shirt. You know, where can I get one? He's like, sorry, they're not for sale. They're just for me. You know, just kidding around. And she's like, well, can I have that one? And he says, I don't know. We can talk about it. and so then we proceeded to do the interview, and they were nice and calm and quiet and left us alone during the interview. And then we finished the thing up, and Derek, you know, went back into the clubhouse, and I thought that was it. So we're packing our gear up. We're done. We're breaking down the camera and the lights and everything. And the next thing I know is I notice out of the corner of my eye, I see Derek coming back up out of the tunnel from the clubhouse into the dugout, and he steps up, walks up on the top step of the dugout, and he has something in his hand, and he tosses it to this lady who was kidding around with him, and it was literally the shirt off his back. He gave her the shirt off his back, and I thought she was going to die right there. You know, can you imagine? And so it was great, but that gives you an idea of what a great, cool guy he is, and that's why we love working with guys like that, and we really, really work hard to ensure that when we look for somebody who we want to be the face of our company out there in Major League Baseball, that we're looking for guys like that, who are class guys, who are honest and have integrity and are going to be loyal to us and are going to put, you know, a good face forward for our company. And that's exactly this list of guys here, what they do. Derek Jeter, Buster Posey, who is, you know, has won two World Series in a three-year career, and part of that 1 year was gone because he broke his ankle. You know, he's likely going to win the National League MVP. He won the batting title this year with a .336 batting average. Class guy, and actually relationship with him goes back to Florida State, where he played his college baseball, and Florida State is one of our college-sponsored programs. Josh Hamilton, Joey Votto, Jay Bruce, Evan Longoria, David Wright, Curtis Granderson, Ryan Zimmerman of the Washington Nationals, A.J. Brzezinski, who's with the White Sox, going free agent, and Jim Thome, one of the greatest home run hitters of all time, already surpassed 600 home runs. These are the kind of guys that we like to deal with. But we're not all about Major League Baseball. We're in youth baseball, everything from Little League to USSSA and baseball youth road trip, which has a lot of tournaments around the country, the Cal Ripken Babe Ruth League, Pony, Dixie League, Perfect Game. Anybody who knows anything about travel ball, especially high-level travel ball, Perfect Game is the top organization in America for sponsoring these and putting these tournaments on for the elite players. It's something like 80% of the players who play in Perfect Game events go on to play either college, high-level Division I college baseball, or go on and play professional baseball, minor league, or even make it to the majors. So great. And we're out there all the time doing promotions and making sure that we keep our company out there representing Louisville Slugger and our name with these players all across America and doing promotions on site. Our company is also diversified. I don't know if any of you have heard of Bionic Gloves, but we have worked with one of the leading orthopedic hand surgeons in the world, Dr. James Kleiner, who you may have heard of from the Kleiner and Kutz Hand Institute, Hand Surgery Center in Louisville. If you ever seriously injure your hand, you're fortunate that you live close to Louisville, Kentucky, because that's the place to go in the world to have hand surgery. Number one place in the world. And Dr. Kleiner is the son of Harold Kleiner, who was one of the founders of that Hand Surgery Institute, microsurgery, and Jim learned the knee of his father. As a matter of fact, Jim told me that when other kids his age, at age 8, were going to play Little League baseball games, he was going with his father to the operating room. So he literally learned at the knee of his father about hand surgery. And Jim, just a great guy, has done over 10,000 hand surgeries. He's trained over 300 other hand surgeons, so that gives you a sense of the knowledge that he has. He's recognized as one of the top five hand surgeons in the world. And we worked with him to develop technology in gloves. It started when we had our hockey division, and we were looking for a way to improve technology in hockey gloves. And he invented a glove that just revolutionized hockey gloves and is still worn today by about 175 players in the National Hockey League. And then the technology evolved, and we put it into batting gloves, and then we found out that people were buying our batting gloves to work in their gardens because that made their hands feel so good. And so it's evolved from there to golf gloves and equestrian gloves and driving gloves and all kinds of things. So it's a way that we've kept our business growing and diversifying. We've also diversified within our core business of baseball. We make all kinds of baseball products, everything from fielding gloves. You see Ian Kinsler there from the Texas Rangers. He's one of our glove guys. We have close to 200 players in Major League Baseball who wear a Louisville Slugger TPX. This is a brand that we've been using on our gloves for high-level baseball. But we've got a lot of pitchers. If you ever notice, you're watching a Major League Baseball game on TV, and sometimes you'll see those close-up shots of like Andy Pettit of the Yankees right here, or Roger Clemens was notorious for always holding his glove right there. Well, Roger Clemens was one of our glove guys. Andy Pettit's one of our glove guys. We've got a lot of Cole Hamels for the Philadelphia Phillies is one of our top guys now. And the reason we target pitchers is from a marketing standpoint, because we know that those are the guys who get on TV the most, and they're holding that glove right there, so we love it when it says Louisville right down the finger. So there is a method to our madness. But we make, you know, equipment bags, all kinds of protective gear, like catcher's gear and shin guards, and anything to do within the baseball business. Of course, we're not in just the wood bat business. We also make aluminum and composite bats. Back in the early 1970s, aluminum bats came on the forefront. They were originated by one of our competitors. It was as a way, really, to try to save money for youth players who were breaking their wooden bats all the time, and for high school baseball programs that were breaking bats and just didn't have the budget to keep buying new bats. So a company that was in the aluminum business came out with aluminum bats, and that forced us to get into the business. And really, that's been a huge, huge part of our growth, and where we make a good portion of our revenues today. It's a big revenue stream for us. And it's evolved then now from aluminum to also the new technology is composite bats, aerospace types of fibers and materials that we create these bats and engineer the sweet spot to be really huge so that these high school and youth players can have fun, even on a miss hit, that they can get a hit and have fun and be involved in the game of baseball. Two of the bats you see there, the one at the top, the 1X, and then the one on the bottom, the Xeno, were actually fast pitch bats for girls and women's fast pitch softball, which is a growing segment of our business, and actually is one of the only parts of what we call diamond sports, baseball, slow pitch softball, fast pitch, that really has shown some growth. It's been fairly flat, but the great thing about baseball is that while the numbers have been flat, the players who are playing more often. The travel baseball has gotten really, really huge. And now you have these kids who play anywhere from 50 to 100 games per year when they're 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And that's great for our business because they need equipment. We are big supporters of collegiate athletics. University of Arizona is national champions this year in the College World Series, and they are proudly a Louisville Slugger TPX team. Poster there celebrating the Arizona Wildcats championship and some of the bats that they used. And so this is just a copy of an ad that we run in some publications and sports publications. We work with about 50 Division I programs in baseball and about 35 Division I programs in college fast pitch softball, supporting the ladies. A big part of what we do is trying to continue to innovate. You know, I talked about how you can never rest on your laurels, and part of that is because you just shouldn't. And another part of it is because if you do, somebody else is going to come out there and try to take your lunch. And that's why we've got a lot of these competitors out there. We have about 60% of the market share in Major League Baseball, about 75% of the market share in Minor League Baseball. So with all the professional teams, 60% in Major League, 75% in Minor League, that's a huge share. But you know, all these other companies out there are trying to nip at our heels all the time and take a little piece of that. So I mentioned 30 teams in Major League Baseball approved to supply bats this year. You know, we'd love to have a higher share than 60%, But when you think about it, we've got 60. That means there's 29 other companies fighting for 40. So you know, we still feel pretty good about that. One of the innovations that we have recently come up with is something we call MLB Prime. And for the first time in history, the public players, youth players, those old guys in the old guys leagues I was talking about, high school players, college players playing in wood bat leagues, whatever the case may be, can get the same high quality wood that we sell and provide to the major league players. Now, that means that we have to work harder going out into the forest to find the right trees that produce high quality professional grade baseball bats. And I can't do that, but we have people who can. And we have people in our forests in New York and Pennsylvania, which is where we harvest our wood for baseball bats, who can go into the forest and can identify the trees they think that are going to yield the best quality wood for making baseball bats. We use about 40,000 trees per year to make wooden baseball bats, and the average tree will yield about 40 bats. Now, all of those aren't going to be high quality major league bats. As a matter of fact, there'll be some trees that we won't get any major league bats out of it. So that means that we're going to have to step up our game in terms of finding more of these really high quality trees. And we do our harvesting in a selective way. We don't go in and clear cut. We go into the forest and we select the trees that are going to be the best to yield high-quality baseball bats. And that's actually great for the forest, because by selectively cutting the forest, that lets more sunlight in to help the seedlings that hit the ground and regenerate the forest. So it's really a great way to adhere to all the sustainability practices of the states of New York and Pennsylvania, where we harvest our wood. I love to say that, you know, really, we were green before green was cool, because we've been doing it that way for years. Something else that we do that's really cool, that's green, is that if you go in our factory, you will see, you know, you would think that a wood factory would have, you know, lots of sawdust and wood chips all over the place, and there's some of that, but you will be amazed. It's really remarkable how clean our factory is, because we have vacuum hoses on all the lathes that vacuum and suck up all this sawdust and wood chips into these hoses, and they go into the back of a semi-tractor trailer. And twice a week, there's a turkey farmer up in southern Indiana who comes and gets our wood chips and sawdust, and he takes it back to the turkey farm and he uses it for turkey bedding. So when you're eating your Thanksgiving turkey in a couple of weeks, I want you to think about Louisville Slugger. That turkey may just have bedded down on some Louisville Slugger wood chips and sawdust. But again, we were green before green was cool. We were making sure that everything was used. There's very little waste. We also use some of the wood that we are unable to use for baseball bats for, you know, some we turn into these mini bats that are sold for souvenirs or given away. We've sold wood to tool companies for making tool handles. Nothing goes to waste. Even cull bats that have minor blemishes on them, or maybe they got misbranded or something, we sell some of those in our gift shop, which my friend Nick Costello back here knows because he worked in our gift shop last summer, and he's a student here at WKU. We sell some of those there, and then others we will send to kids in inner cities to use playing baseball. We send equipment to the Dominican Republic. We work with an organization called Roberto's Kids, which is works very closely with Roberto Clemente's family, and they send a lot of equipment down to Latin America. We send equipment to Native American reservations. There's an organization called Baseball Oyate that provides equipment to Native American reservations in South Dakota and out west, and we work closely with them. So nothing at all goes to waste. We make sure that everything is used. Anybody recognize this picture? Anybody ever been there?
Yeah.
That's the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory in downtown Louisville. The 120-foot tall Louisville Slugger bat. It's a replica of Babe Ruth's R43 model. It actually has the signature on it, though, of Bud Hilworth, the founder of our company, who made that very first Louisville Slugger bat. And I'm very fortunate. My office sits just to the left here, like about right there, and I look out at that every day. And the coolest thing about that is that I get to look out and see all the people who are coming to visit us and go through our factory and take our tour. And it's a great reminder of who we serve and why we're here and why we're there to serve our customers and to make great products and build those relationships, just like we do with Major League Baseball players, to be able to see that every day. But we're very proud to have that facility, and if you've never been there, I invite you to come sometime. It's a great tour. We get about 250,000 visitors per year. We've won a number of awards, and actually won a Best Tour Experience Award for one of the top 10 best factory tours in America recently. We get to a lot of cool stuff. You know, the charitable stuff I was talking about. I've got a picture of myself there with Curtis Granderson from the Yankees, another just great guy. Again, the types of guys we try to work with and recruit to represent our company. Curtis not only swings our bat, but he also wears our batting gloves. And most players will, you know, when they sign the contract to wear those batting gloves, they get paid for it. They get money. Curtis doesn't want money. He's making millions of dollars. You know, what's another $25,000 or $30,000 to him? So what Curtis does is he says, I'll take it in product. So we donate youth baseball product to Curtis Granderson. And the great thing about that is that he's then able to stretch that because we're taking it at what our cost is to manufacture it rather than the retail cost. And he can turn that into three times what the real value would be. And then he takes that equipment and he donates it to inner city schools in New York where he plays and in his hometown of Chicago. So just a great, great class guy, the kind of guys that we are looking to partner with all the time. You see Al Roker there with the pink Louisville Slugger bat. We started the pink bat program in 2006. You may be familiar with it. We originated pink bats for Major League players to swing on Mother's Day. It's a project that we actually took to Major League Baseball and said, hey, what do you think about this? It'd be a great way to bring some awareness for breast cancer and maybe raise some money too. And Major League Baseball embraced the idea and has been a great partner of ours in helping to promote the pink bats for Mother's Day. The players use the bats. Then after the players use the bats, Major League Baseball sends their people in and they get the players to autograph them. Then they put their authentication hologram on them. And then they auction them off on MLB.com. And then we also sell personalized versions of these pink bats, so anybody can buy one. And for every single pink bat that we sell, Louisville Slugger sells, we make a $10 donation to Major League Baseball's breast cancer charity. So since 2006, we've been very proud to help Major League Baseball and its breast cancer partners to raise over $1 million for breast cancer charities. So that's another great thing that we're able to do because of our stature in the game. Lots of other charitable stuff. You see David Fries and Matt Holliday there with Rally Squirrel. If anybody here is a St. Louis Cardinals fan, you might remember Rally Squirrel from last year when the Cardinals had a squirrel run across home plate when they were down in the playoffs, and or actually late in the season, and then it kind of propelled and turned their season around. And so then they created this Rally Squirrel mascot at Cardinal Glennon Children's Medical Center in St. Louis, and we worked very closely with them on helping them to raise funds. We work with Cincinnati Children's Hospital and a number of other children's organizations to bring things to them. We've always been a big supporter of the American military. You can see some of these old pictures here. This photo actually shows our factory during World War II. The factory only made bats for Major League Baseball players during World War II. The rest of the factory made gun stocks for the war effort and tank pins that are something that goes on the tracks of tanks to keep them on track. We've always sent equipment to our troops. You can see the old photo there for our Armed Forces Baseball Equipment Fund. We actually started sending baseball equipment to our troops in World War I. We have photos in our archives showing players from World War I swinging Louisville Slugger equipment in Europe. And there's an old letter we found in our archives from a player who was from Kentucky. And he said that he shed tears of joy upon seeing this familiar product from back home when he got that wooden Louisville Slugger baseball bat over in Europe during the war effort. And since then, we've sent equipment to our soldiers in every war. World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, Afghanistan. Since 2003, we've helped send over 20 tons of baseball and softball equipment and other sporting goods to our troops. And it's great because we get lots of emails and sometimes even satellite phone calls from these soldiers, you know, thanking us for what we did to help keep their morale up and give them something to do when they have a little bit of downtime. And what's really cool is when we get pictures like this one, they send us back. And you know, I love this guy mugging here with the bat, you know, sending us those photos from out there in the field just to show us how much they really appreciate what we've done. And then something else that we do, you see the picture up in the corner. You may notice that's my friend Saul Vasquez. Saul's missing a leg. Saul is military guy who lost his leg in one of the war efforts. We support and are the equipment sponsor for something called the Wounded Warrior Amputee Softball Team. And these guys are just remarkable. You should see them. They play almost every weekend somewhere across the country. They're great athletes. Saul actually played Division I college baseball at Eastern Michigan University. Their shortstop's a guy named Matt Kinsey, who played college baseball and football. So these are guys who went into the military and lost a foot, lost a leg, lost an arm. There's a couple of guys on the team who lost both legs. Josh Wege, a great kid from Wisconsin, pitches a lot, just a great athlete. He's a Paralympian who's won like 8 gold medals in the Paralympics. Mateus Ferreira lost 2 legs. He's their catcher. And you should see these guys play. I get emotional when I think about it. They're just amazing. They're inspiration. And if you ever are any place where you're close by, where you can see these guys play softball, you need to go see them because they will inspire you. You will see them play and you'll go, gosh, I need to get up off the couch and do something because these guys are just remarkable. We've made bats for Muhammad Ali. That's one Louisville Slugger holding another. Ali has visited us several times, the champ. And of course, his Ali Center is just a couple blocks down the street from our facility. See him as much as we used to. We actually made a bat for the Pope once. This goes back a few years. Of course, that's Pope John Paul. But our distributor in Italy had an opportunity to have an audience with the Pope, and he had us make a bat for the Pope. And so that's the picture. So, you know, it's just it's really cool that we get an opportunity to do that kind of stuff. One thing that certainly has changed the face of the world in recent years and has certainly changed things for us as well is all this social media. You know, this is just an example of some engagement ads that we ran just last weekend in San Francisco because the Giants have won the World Series. So we did a little scavenger hunt out in San Francisco. We sent 3 of our young staff out there. We posted clues on Facebook and Twitter, and we had people running all over San Francisco in the East Bay and the South Bay area trying to find little Slugger commemorative San Francisco Giants World Championship bats. It was really cool. But we've been able to grow our Facebook page to, actually we're now at about 218,000. I checked before I left today, and we're a couple of thousand higher than that. We've got about 15,000 fans on Twitter following us, and we're constantly, you know, tweeting at people and players. And you know, I mean, it's amazing. Some of these baseball players, like Brandon Phillips for the Cincinnati Reds, has about 250,000 followers on Twitter. Nick Swisher from the Yankees has about 1.2 million followers on Twitter. So we tweet at these guys. We hope that they'll retweet us, and we can keep our message out there. And it's a way that we can also continue to connect with the youth players, because that's where they are now. They're not reading collegiate baseball news, you know, the paper version. They're online looking at it, or they're trying to see what collegiate baseball news is doing in social media space. So that's where we have to be as well. And we've even gotten Pinterest more for our fast pitch side to appeal to the ladies, since it's more of a female demographic. And we actually even created a Facebook page just for our fast pitch. So while I say we have 216,000 followers on Facebook, that's just our main Louisville Slugger baseball page. We have about 60,000 on our women's and girls fast pitch page, and that's growing. As a matter of fact, it amazes me. When we do post on that page, we get more engagement and more reaction than we do on the main page. I mean, girls who play softball are just passionate about the game. I mean, but we get to do you know, lots of cool stuff with media. That's a part of what I do. We work with all of these organizations and many, many more. You know, on the way over here earlier tonight, I was telling Brian that today was a really big day for us at Louisville Slugger. Today is the day that we announced the Silver Slugger Awards. And the Silver Slugger Awards are the offensive equivalent to the Golden Glove Awards. Golden Gloves being for the best defensive player by position in both the American and National Leagues, the Silver Slugger being the award for the best offensive producer by position in the American and National Leagues. And we just announced those awards exclusively tonight on the MLB Network in an hour-long special telecast. And so I was doing some final work on that today, some publicity stuff, and was getting emails from the Washington Nationals and the San Diego Padres and some of the other teams, you know, who had winners, wanting to know how long they had to hold the information, you know, before they could put it out. And they were going to schedule interviews with their media, with their players, and just so we get to do a lot of cool stuff like that. It's just a really, really neat place to work because we have this great, great brand of Louisville Slugger. But I think one of the coolest pieces that has been done on us in recent years is a piece that ESPN did, and I'm going to show it to you here in just a second. they called us last summer, and they wanted to do a piece about the journey of a piece of wood from being a tree all the way through to going onto the field of a Major League Baseball game. And I thought that was one of the coolest ideas I've ever heard. And ESPN was willing to do this on us, and we didn't have to pay a penny for it. Heck yeah. Come on. I'll do whatever you want. So they spent months working on this piece and spent a ton of money. They rented a camera. One camera they rented for shooting this is called a Red camera. It cost them $25,000 a day just to rent the camera to take into the forest, and then they brought it to the factory. And they put together what is, you'll see here, is a six-minute piece that aired for the first time in the pregame show opening day on ESPN last spring before the new Miami Marlins, formerly the Florida Marlins, opened their new ballpark in Miami. And the player they we were making a bat for was Hanley Ramirez, who has now since been traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers. But Hanley was with the Marlins at the time. And what you're going to see here is a really, really cool piece. And this piece ended up being so popular that ESPN ended up playing this thing like 18 or 20 different times in their various shows and various networks because people were wanting to see it. I know that, you know, because of video being on a jump drive that tends to pixelate a little bit, so you won't get the full effect of how great this piece really was, but it really, really is cool, and it's something that we're very proud of and proud to have been associated with. And just to be able to have 6 minutes on ESPN 20 times, I don't have the kind of budget that it would take to pay for that kind of advertising, but it's just great, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. That ESPN dissolved into Hanley Ramirez walking onto the field with the bat. It was pretty cool. And that was the tree you saw fall in the forest. That was that wood that was followed all the way through the process, the very same wood. So when he walked onto the field with that bat, it was from the tree you saw fall in the forest. It wasn't just, you know, well, let's just pretend that was it. That was some other tree. No, they marked that particular tree when it was cut, when it went to the mill, once it was milled and then went into the kiln to dry to the appropriate level of moisture content, and then when it was put on the truck, and then, you know, that cool high-speed camera accelerated to show the trip from Pennsylvania to Louisville, and then through the whole manufacturing process into the box, on the airplane, into Miami, into his hands on the field. It was really, really a cool concept and something that was great. But that's the kind of thing that we are very proud of to be able to do, to represent our company, but to represent Louisville, hometown in Kentucky, our home state. Gives us great honor to represent Kentucky all around the world, and we take great pride in that. So that's all I have from my standpoint, but I'm certainly welcome any questions that you might have. Yes?
What is the average lifespan of a bat for a professional batter? And secondly, who selects those trees and knows that they are stable?
Great questions. You know, a bat, you just never know. There are guys who can go a season maybe using a couple dozen bats, and then there are guys who will go through 5 or 6 dozen bats. Part of it depends upon the type of wood. We use two different species, Northern White Ash, which was always the wood of choice for decades, and now maple. And it's about 50-50. About half the players use the Northern White Ash, and about half use the maple. And the maple breaks much easier because of its cell structure being shorter and more tight, and because it's a more brittle wood. And so you never really know. Most major league players will order anywhere from 10 to 12 dozen bats per season. So 100 to 120 bats per season. But when you think about how much work they do, that helps you understand that. From the start of spring training all the way through a 162-game season, and every day going to the batting cage and taking 100, 200, 250 swings in batting practice. So all of those are not game bats. A lot of them are used for batting practice. And when a player gets a box of bats in the clubhouse like you saw in the Derek Jeter video, they're opening them up, they start looking for what they call the pearls. The pearls are the ones that feel just great. As soon as that player puts his hands on it, he knows, man, this is a bat I'm going to use in a game. And then the ones that don't feel quite like pearls, but maybe feel pretty good, are ones that they'll put in a pile that they're going to use for batting practice. And then there'll be some that are going, I don't like this one at all. It just doesn't feel right. I'm not going to use this for anything. So those are the bats they sign and give to sick kids in hospitals. Now, your second question was, how do we select these trees and who does that? Well, we have specialists, timber specialists in the forest doing this for decades, and their fathers before them did it, and their fathers before them did it. And so it's just been one of those things that's been passed down through generations, and these people just have the knack and the know-how to go into a forest and be able to identify a tree that they think will yield good wood for Major League Baseball bats. But to put the quality topic into perspective, the wood is graded a minimum of four times before it ever gets on a lathe to be turned into a Major League Baseball bat. It's graded in the forest. This tree looks like this is high quality wood. Let's go for it. Once it's cut, it goes to the mill. It's graded again. Once it ships to Louisville from our mills in New York and Pennsylvania, it comes in the door. And then before it goes onto the lathe one last time, it's graded to make sure that it's quality enough to be a Major League Baseball bat. And then even after it comes off the lathe, our craftsmen will take those bats, they'll roll them to make sure that there's not some warpage. Warpage is never a problem that we've had with ash, but it has been a problem with maple because the way maple trees grow, they sometimes tend to turn in the wind. So we'll get some warpage in the maple bats. And maple bats sometimes also have defects on the interior of the wood billet that we don't see in ash. So, but it's quite a process.
One more question back here. Yes.
Do you replant trees after you cut them down?
Actually, the forest naturally regenerates itself. So when we selectively cut a tree in the forest, as I mentioned earlier, through the selective cutting the trees, picking the right ones, more sun comes in, helps to regenerate the forest. And it's actually the selective cutting of the forest that we do is actually healthy for the forest and helps the forest regenerate and to grow. So we don't actually go out and physically plant, but the forest regenerates itself. And the fact of the matter is, even with us cutting down 40,000 trees per year, the trees we use are typically in the age range of about 50 to 70 years old. So the trees grow back faster than we can cut them down, even at us cutting them down at 40,000 a year, because when you think about the millions and millions and millions of trees in the forest, they actually grow back even faster than we can cut them down. So,
one more question? Back
yes.
here.
I noticed that you had some really good business advice, too, for companies, and that was very interesting.
Well, that's, you know, that's something I always like to point out, because I think that, you know, because of really quite often, how do you guys stay on top for 128 years? It's just unheard of. And especially, as I mentioned at the very beginning, to be a family-owned company in our fifth generation, how do you do that? The family's actually been brilliant. They brought in a family business consultant. They have a family business, a family council, and they meet on a regular basis to just talk about the family and its place in the business and what everybody does. And they work with this outside consultant to ensure that they can find a way to pass the company on to the sixth generation and keep it going. Believe me, the family's been offered to sell the company many times. They've had many offers, and they could have taken the money and run, which is really one of the reasons that most companies don't get past the third generation or don't get past the fourth generation, because somebody finally throws up their hands and says, the heck with it, I'm taking the money and I'm out of here. But they, like, there's a stewardship that they have to the game of baseball and the history of baseball and its connection with our country. They're just trying to keep this thing going as long as they can. But you know, we feel like it's important to share the things that we have learned over the decades that other companies might be able to learn from us. And again, that's things like quality, customer service, relationships, and then the fourth thing for us now really is innovation. You have to keep innovating. You can't just sit back and go, okay, well, we know what we're doing. You have to continually find new products, new ways to get better. Or otherwise, somebody, like I said before, is going to take your lunch.
And on that note, I'm going to call this to a close. We're going to do as we always do. We're going to have a door prize tonight. And maybe you could just tell us about our
special
door prize tonight.
Well, you may notice here I have one very fine red WKU Hilltopper Louisville Slugger bat. One of the things that we do is we have relationships with about 40 or so colleges. This is an officially licensed product. You can see the hologram on the back. So we have a licensing agreement with WKU, just like we do with a number of other colleges and universities, U of L, UK, North Carolina, UCLA, University of Virginia, Florida, Florida State, University of Texas. I could go on and on. And we work with their alumni associations, and we sell these bats on our website. And when we sell one of these bats, we make a $20 donation to that university's alumni association. If anybody ever wants to buy one of these, or you're looking for a great Christmas gift or something for the WKU alum or whatever, you can go on our website and buy these. And when you buy one, you can rest assured that we'll make the $20 donation from the sale of that bat to the WKU alumni association. So this is simply, usually this is where we put someone's name or a special message. I just had this one made to say Genuine Hilltopper, Louisville Swamper.
Well, on that note, I'm going to get Miss Wright to reach into the mix them up good, and we'll see. The lucky person is Maddie. Maddie.
All right.
Sure. Right.
There you go.
There we go. And Rick's also brought along some books about Louisville.
Yeah, you can draw for those. And
we'll do a drawing for these.
Sure.
Newberry Street, John.
One of the fun things about meeting you is I am the only person in this room who knew Babe Ruth.
No, you were.
How cool is that?
Oh, who actually knew Babe Ruth. Yeah.
And we wanted to give you just a little memento, as if you needed it, of Western, and you're going to love it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mr. Redman has brought along some souvenir bats, and as you pass by at the end, we'll be happy to make you an order of each of these. On behalf of WKU Library, we want to thank you so much for coming out and enlightening us about one of our iconic products. We want to thank our host, Barnes & Noble. We hope you'll join us next week at this same time when we'll have a presentation in our Faraway Places series on the Caldwell family survival of the Titanic. So thanks again and good evening.
Thanks, everyone. Make sure you get some miniature bats.